We're good to go. Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Mark Dewdney, the CEO of PGG Wrightson. Welcome to our annual shareholders meeting for 2015. It was lovely driving in here today and seeing a bit of rain. I was sort of reflecting on how important rain was, and I was thinking, well, if we could have an annual general meeting every day that brought rain with it, we would certainly do that for our farmers. Before we get started, there are a few housekeeping matters I'd like to cover. In the unlikely event of an emergency during the meeting, please note that the exits to the building are here, directly out the back and through the door and out that way somewhere. So the assembly area is in the parade area, just outside on the lawn, and toilets are located in the foyer. So I can confirm that there is a quorum present, and accordingly, I declare the meeting open. Before we begin the meeting and the business of the meeting, I'm pleased to introduce our board of directors, and I'll ask that each of you stand when I call your name. Seated alongside me is Alan Lai, our chairman. Beside Alan is Deputy Chairman Trevor Burt. And in the front row, we have other members of our board, Ken Seng Yu, Independent Director Ronald Sear, W.K. Sang, and Independent Director John Nicol, and our other Independent Director and Audit Committee Chairman Bruce Irvine. We also have John Fulton with us today, who is an alternate director for WK and is the CFO of Agria Corporation. Beside me today on the stage, we have two of our senior management team, our CFO, Peter Scott, who joined us, Peter, about 6 months ago. Brought him across from Australia, happy to report that he will support the All Blacks on Saturday. And our GM Strategy and Corporate Affairs, Julian Daly, who is also our company secretary. I also would like to acknowledge other members of our executive management team in attendance today. We've got Stephen Gurin, who heads our retail business, John McKenzie, who is the head of our seed and grain business, and Peter Newbold, who heads our real estate business. We've got a number of other staff of the company as well, and it's great to see you all here with us, including our regional manager for the Canterbury area, Chris Adam. Nice to see you, Chris. We've also got our external auditors, KPMG, in attendance. Alex, thanks for everything you do to support us. We have no apologies. I just ask if there are any additional apologies from anybody who is here today. No? Okay, so we'll note, Julian, that there are no apologies. Julian, our company secretary, has confirmed that the notice of annual meeting was sent on the 30th of September to all shareholders who were registered on the 21st of September and to other people who were entitled to receive that notice. At the minutes, I can confirm that the minutes of the company's previous annual meeting, which was held on the 21st of October 2014, were approved as a true and correct record at the directors' meeting that was held on the 3rd of December 2014. And the minutes of that meeting are posted on the shareholder information section of the company's website. I can report today that we have 362 shareholders who have appointed proxies for the purpose of this meeting. The financial statements and the reports of the directors and auditors for the year ending 30 June 2015 are set out in the company's annual report. And on the 30th of September 2015, that annual report was forwarded to shareholders who had requested a copy, and it's also available on the company's website. And additional hard copies of the annual report are available at the entrance to the meeting room today. So look, that covers the formalities, and we will now move to the general business of the meeting. We'll start by hearing from our Chairman, Alan Lai. Alan will then pass the floor back to me, and I will give an overview of the past financial year for the business. I'll cover the financial and operational highlights for individual business units within the group. I'll give you an update on our strategy for the company and how that's progressing. and then I will summarize how we are tracking in the current financial year, and I will provide some guidance at the end on what we believe our full year results for this year are likely to be at this early stage in the year. Then there will be an opportunity for questions and discussions before we move to the formal business and the resolutions that will be put to the meeting. So on that note, I will hand over to our Chairman, Alan Lai, to address the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, this has come to the sixth AGM I've been attending since 2009, and it has taken 7 years for me to serve PGG Horizon. And this is a great history. I would say I spend the most valuable time in the company. I grow with the team, with the company together. Okay, it was my pleasure to address you today and acknowledge the excellent result over the past year and the strides that have been made by PGG Horizon on delivering our strategy. Much credit is due to the staff that have worked in the business and with our customers over the year. The year to 30 June 2015 continued to see earnings grow strongly as they did in 2014. The improvements have not only been financial, though, the board and I continue to see significant improvements across all aspects of the company. The management team has been given a challenge to grow the business and they are delivering. Mark has an engaged and passionate team of people working with him. The board believes that PGW will further capitalize on its unique position in the agriculture sector in New Zealand and continue to grow other markets in which it operates internationally. The strong financial and operating performance and balance sheet strength gave the board the confidence to pay a final dividend of 2 cents per share. This makes a total of 4 cents per share fully imputed for the year. This is slightly reduced from 2014's total ordinary dividends of 4.5 cents per share and reflects that more challenging market conditions that agriculture sector has moved into. The reduced distribution reflects a prudent approach in the less certain trading environment and positions of PGW to continue to reinvest in the business for the further growth. Management had the full support of the board and has made pleasing progress on I'm not so fluent in English yet, but I'm trying to practice more on delivering the strategy. And the board is confident that the strategy has the business focused on the right areas and believe that it achieved the right balance between operational execution, continuous improvements, and growth. We have every faith that business is on the right path for the future. Finally, on behalf of the board, I would acknowledge the effort and commitment of our staff across PGG Horizon's business in delivering this excellent result. I now hand you back to my chief executive, Mark Dewney. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And Alan, your English is excellent, way better than my Mandarin. So, ladies and gentlemen, before we start, please note that we use operating EBITDA as a key measure of our performance within the business. And as you will know, operating EBITDA is a non-GAAP financial accounting measure. And I would just refer you to our full accounts for the details of how operating EBITDA translates through to net profit measures. The last year was the strongest result that we have had for many years, and I would like to join our chairman in acknowledging the commitment and the contribution of our staff in achieving these results. Our operating EBITDA grew by another 18% over the year to $69.5 million. And this slide summarises a number of the accomplishments through the business in 2015. You know, there's a number of items up there, and you know, they are some of the things that reflect why we believe that PGW is a much stronger company today than it was even a year ago. I'd like to just touch on a few of these items at this point, and I'll cover a number of others as I go through the individual business units. But we completed three acquisitions during the year, one in South America, one in Australia, and one here in New Zealand in our water irrigation business. You know, technology is a really important part of our business today, and it will be an increasingly important part of the future for us. We've rolled out tablets with supporting applications to all of our retail and our livestock field staff. We've completed a major upgrade to our back office enterprise resource planning software. We implemented a new IT platform in our real estate business, and we've refreshed our company website. You know, all things that are important to, you know, continue to bring us forward in terms of how we operate as a company and how we deal with our customers. We've also made very strong progress improving our health and safety culture, which is, as you all know, an increasingly critical part of any business anywhere. And a simple example of that is the focus that we put on health and safety at our annual two-day regional leadership programs. We run 18 events throughout our business. We had over 350 of our senior staff come together for 2 days to focus on, you know, how we improve their ability to lead their business units. And you know, one of those days was focused on health and safety, you know, sharing the learnings from across our business, understanding where the regulations and the law are in this area, and listening to professionals in the health and safety area who can help us to improve how we run our business and how we ensure that our staff get home safely every single day. We've continued to invest in our people, and for those of you who have heard me speak in the past, I focus a lot on our people. You know, absolutely the reason that we are successful is directly related to the calibre, the commitment, the passion of the staff who work for our business. And we continue to invest as much as we possibly can in our teams of people. But we've also invested a lot of money in the last 12 months in our business infrastructure and in improving our product and our service range. And that's built a strong foundation that's focused on delivering quality products and services to our customers in a way that deepens and builds the relationships that we have with them. Yeah, and yeah, we've got a big business, it's complex, but we can simplify it all down to quality people, quality products, quality service. And if we get those three things right every single day, then we will be successful as a business. We've also put a lot of effort into the culture of the organisation, and I'm very pleased to be able to report that our staff engagement performance index, which we measure every single year, is at an all-time high. You know, our store refurbishment program and our frontline training programs have also helped to contribute to market share gains for us in the majority of the categories in which we compete. Our investments in research and development continue to improve the performance of our product range and strengthen our intellectual property portfolio. Both of those directly generate productivity improvement gains for our customers. And it's really, really pleasing to be able to stand in front of you today and say that those gains and that hard work are translating into increased financial returns for our shareholders. I think one of the most pleasing aspects of the 2015 financial result is that we achieved the gains as market conditions deteriorated around us. Conditions for agriculture in the first half of the year were generally favourable. Commodity prices were strong, climate was pretty benign. But as the financial year unfolded, we saw pressure coming into a number of our sectors, most notably dairy, which you will all have seen and read about. Fonterra's opening payout forecast was a pretty healthy $7 a kilo of milk solids, but by the end of the season, the actual payout that dairy farmers received was only $4.40, and at $4.40, the majority of dairy farmers are operating in a negative cash flow situation. And what we saw was a number of dairy farmers cutting costs towards the end of the season and bracing themselves for what they expected to be an even tougher year this year. And so the businesses that we have that are heavily or more heavily weighted towards demand for the dairy sector, such as our grain business, face some really challenging conditions. The great thing about our business, though, is that we are not just a dairy business. In fact, our overall exposure to dairy, we estimate, is probably, say, 25% of our overall business, maybe plus or minus 5. And in contrast to the dairy sector, beef, sheep, horticulture, all were strong and gained in strength over the year. Our fruit-fed business was able to capitalise on this and had an absolutely fantastic year. The strength of the beef sector also gave a lot of protection to our retail, seeds and livestock businesses. And I think the 2015 year really does demonstrate the strength of our business model and the strength of the diversity of our portfolio. The fact that we supply product into all farming sectors, all geographies, in New Zealand, outside New Zealand, and we cover all the major product categories. So, to a large extent, when you get a cyclical downturn in one area, the rest of our businesses are able to carry the slack, so to speak, to some extent. And I think the strength of the of that portfolio in our business is often missed by missed by commentators and missed by the general market. But it is a real strength of PGW, and it's something that we focus on, and we want to continue to ensure that we keep that very, very diverse and broad footprint. Let me just go to our individual business units now. I'll start with retail this year. Our retail segment includes our rural supplies, fruit fed and agri-trade businesses. We continued to trade really well there. Combined revenues were up $9 million or 2%, which is a great result. Operating EBITDA increased by $1.8 million to $27.3 million. And this is our fourth successive year of growth in retail profitability. If I put that into perspective, if I go back and look at the last period since 2011, we've grown our operating EBITDA by $9 million or 46%. Keep in mind that this is a highly competitive market, and we have some very strong large competitors in the likes of Farmlands, RD1, and a whole lot of other really strong regional competition. So our team have done a great job there. Should be very proud of them. I've talked in the past about the hard work we've put into developing our technical expertise, our customer service skills, and our logistics systems, and how this is delivering positive results. And that work continues, and in fact that work will never stop. What's exciting though is that we are seeing the momentum now that these improvements are generating. And the culture, the positive culture that we have fostered, is seeing our teams working together better than they've ever worked to support our customers. Positive culture leads teams to be more flexible to change and adaption as the needs of our customers are changing and as our competitors are trying to change the way that they compete against us. So, you've got a very, very strong business in retail operating through New Zealand. Our seed and grain business also increased operating EBITDA, excluding earnings of associates, up to $40.5 million last year. Yeah, that was up $6.5 million or 19%. And after several years of strong earnings growth, seed and grain earnings now surpass the levels that were achieved before we divested our agri-feeds business back in 2012. So again, that's a really, really good achievement, something that we're very happy with, and I hope as shareholders that you are also happy with. The growth this year was concentrated in our New Zealand and our Australian seeds businesses. In Australia, we've done a huge amount of work over the last 4 or 5 years, merging together a number of companies we acquired several years ago and building one approach to the market. And we are seeing the benefits of refocusing our activities and streamlining our footprint now. We're delivering on the business plan that we set to grow the sales of proprietary seed, which we sell at much better margins than some of the commodity annual grasses, and that's proving to be successful. We've also got a very, very good, strong, growing turf business in Australia. We're seeing increases in both turf seed and hydro mulch, which is a really interesting product that we sell into the revegetation industry in Australia. New Zealand seeds business, one of the very strong businesses in our portfolio, has continued to perform very well. We're seeing a shift in product mix there towards fodder beet and proprietary herbs, legumes and grasses. We delivered growth despite the downturn in the dairy sector, which was great news. Faring a little less well in face of the headwinds in dairy was our grain business. Demand for grain for supplementary feed is driven to a large extent from dairy, and as farmers looked to cut back feed input, that put some pressure around our grain business. But overall, still delivered a pretty solid result. South America, a key growth area for us, also faced some challenging market conditions. Uruguay had a really tough year weather-wise. The first half of the year, they received double their normal rainfall, and the second half of the year, they received no rain. So if you look at Uruguay, over 12 months, you'd say they had an average year of weather, but the fact that all the rain happened in the first half and none came in the second half put a lot of pressure on that business. But despite that, we sold more pasture seed in 2015 than we sold in 2014 and at higher margins. And we attribute a lot of that gain to the recent investments that we've made in seed coating in Uruguay. In spring 2014, we faced a really challenging issue with swede toxicity in Southland and South Otago, and one of several swede cultivars that was involved was our HT swede variety. And when that happened, we worked very closely as part of a pan-industry group with Dairy NZ, with Massey University, with Federated Farmers and local vets to try to understand what the underlying issues were that were causing the health problems on a relatively small number of farms, so that we could address the issue with good advice for farmers this year. Dairy NZ conducted a comprehensive survey that found that the swede toxicity occurred due to a range of factors, including some on-farm management, some very unusually warm weather patterns in certain geographies that impacted really unusually on plant growth. There's nothing worse in a farming situation than having animals affected, and so we worked very closely with our customers, focusing on trying to help them, as well as trying to ensure that they had the best possible advice on how to, manage transition on and off swedes as part of their ongoing winter feeding programs. In livestock then, I'd go back to rural services. Our livestock business increased operating EBITDA by 15%, up to 15.4 million, which was 2 million up on the prior year. The cattle category was the key contributor to the year-on-year increase, with high beef prices and strong demand from processors. The positive effect of beef was moderated by lower activity in dairy herd sales due to market softness and a small price drop in lamb in the second half of the year. Our live export business lifted its contribution with two shipments in the year, including our first shipment for many years into China. We announced in July that the Commerce Commission had filed proceedings against our livestock division in relation to sale yard fees introduced in 2012 in connection with the implementation of the National Animal Identification Tracing Act, or NAIT as it is referred to. That matter, as we have reported to shareholders in recent months, is in front of the court at the moment, and we are working with the Commerce Commission to work through this issue and reach a resolution. Given that matter is in front of the courts and we are working, as I said, closely with the Commerce Commission, I'm not in a position to provide any additional comment on the detail of that. Other than to say a couple of things, we do take this extremely seriously, and what we're doing is we are continuing to work across all our teams, looking to make sure that they all understand how they need to act at all times in compliance with regulation and law generally. And I would also note that we made a provision in last year's accounts to cover the potential costs and the potential outcomes of the Commerce Commission proceedings. And when we get to the end of that, which will be some point in the next 3 to 6 months, then we will report in more detail on the outcomes and what that means for us. So I trust that you can understand and appreciate that. If I go to the other businesses in our rural services portfolio, the combined operating EBITDA decreased by 2.3 million down to 11.8 million. And the reduction in earnings was mainly in our real estate business last year. Despite increasing market share, earnings in real estate were adversely affected by the low number of listings that were coming to the market. And that was particularly in the South Island, which has been quite a powerhouse of farm sales in recent years. But a combination of some dry weather just slowed the whole market up there. Offsetting the slow South Island market, though, we achieved very good results in the Waikato and the Bay of Plenty. We've continued to invest into our real estate business. We've continued to strengthen our teams, strengthen our systems, and we are very confident that those investments will put us in a good position to benefit from any uplift in the market and any recovery in volumes as and when that occurs in the future. Our wool business result was very similar to last year at an operating EBITDA level. We traded less bales, but were able to generate good operating efficiencies and cost savings. And we've also, which is really pleasing, made great progress rebuilding our fine wool business, and we have secured a number of really exciting contracts to supply merino wool to several international apparel companies, including a company called Point Six, who are a US-based sock manufacturer, a company called Konaka, who are a Japanese suit manufacturer. So, really high-end applications. And what we're doing is we're putting merino growers directly into the supply chain through to those international garment manufacturers. So it's great business. Our water business also produced similar operating EBITDA to 2014. Sales activity was higher, particularly around Cromwell, but in spite of those higher revenues, we weren't able to beat last year's record profit, which, as you will recall, benefited from the major repair work that came out of the severe windstorms here in Canterbury, which, thank goodness, weren't repeated. So moving on to strategy now. Last year, I introduced our group strategy, and I talked about three key themes: improving our business, growing our business, and looking for game changers that will allow us to meet our changing customer needs and stay ahead of our competitors. Now, 12 months on, I'd just like to elaborate in a little more detail on each of these strategic themes and summarise some of the developments that have occurred since October last year. So if I start with improve, and improve is the base strategy of our business, because no matter how good we are, there is always room to do better. And that mantra goes through our business. We can never, ever rest on our laurels. We will never, ever get to a position where we say, hey, we've done everything, there's nothing more we can do. And so that philosophy drives us every day to try to find better ways to run our existing business. Our core strengths in sheep, beef, arable, horticulture, viticulture, livestock, wool trading and agronomy remain at the heart of our strategy. And we are committed to improving each of these categories. And I think this year's result provides evidence that we are still delivering on that. But as I said, there is still room to improve. Technology creates new solutions. And our real challenge is to continue to evolve our business models as technology allows us to improve internal productivity and provide new solutions for our customers. One PGW, I talked a little bit about this last year. The one PGW ethos is central to our improve theme. And simply that aims to put the customer at the centre of everything that we do as an organisation. We have many business units and many relationships with our customers, and in many areas we may have a very strong relationship in livestock, but no relationship in wool. Or we have the fertiliser business, but we don't have the ag chem business. And so one PGW is about having all of our people aware of all the business that is available on our clients' farms, and looking for opportunities to introduce a colleague or create an opening for one of our other business units to get up there and provide product or service to our customers. Yeah, it also encourages, one PGW also encourages our people to work across the business better. We have a lot of different business units, and it's very easy for them to focus on their own world, and what we're trying to do is say that every single one of our business units has a role to play in the wider PGW, and the notion of one PGW is really, really powerful in getting people to think about the wider interactions that we have with our customers. So I'm happy to say that the improve philosophy, the improve theme is alive, it's well, and it's delivering us good benefits. So if I go to grow then, every single one of our businesses has opportunities to grow within its respective markets. Yeah, in every single market that we operate in, there are still opportunities for us to increase our market share. And in addition to this general opportunity to grow our business through market share gains, we've identified several areas that we believe warrant specific focus and specific investment in order to realise their potential for PGW. Dairy, despite what has happened in the last 12 months as international prices have fallen, we still remain optimistic as a business for the long-term outlook for the New Zealand dairy industry. And further to that, there are still areas within our business where we are underweight in our offering to the dairy sector or in our market share or in our understanding of how the dynamics of that sector in dairy work. We think that we will continue to see some shifts in land use toward dairy and dairy support over time, but we think that that will be at a slower pace than the country has experienced over the last decade. So we are committed to, and we are continuing to invest in our people and our people's understanding of the dairy market and our product range for dairy, and our service offering. And we'll continue to do that, but we want to do that in a balanced way. The second area of growth is water, which we all know is absolutely critical to agriculture and critical to New Zealand, and is a key area of focus in our current government's policy. Our water business has grown very quickly. We are continuing to invest in our people and our capability. We're continuing to look for small bolt-on acquisitions that will give us additional product or capability. And we think over time we will build PGW into the leading, full service water and irrigation offering in New Zealand. South America. We first entered South America in 1999 when we acquired the majority shareholding in a Uruguayan seed wholesaler. And over the last 15 years, we've seen that market grow, and we believe that the momentum and growth in South America will continue. We've got a very significant market share in seed within Uruguay, and we are growing our presence and our brands in the temperate regions of neighbouring Brazil, Argentina, and in early phases up into Paraguay. We've made excellent progress building a new logistics centre in Montevideo, which is in Uruguay, which will support our growth, and we expect that will be commissioned by the end of this calendar year, or very early in the new year. We also have operations in Uruguay in irrigation. We own 100% of an irrigation business, and we have majority shareholdings in a real estate and livestock business. And you will have read over the last 6 months, we have recently acquired 50% shareholding of a company called AgroCentro, which is a retailer, an agri retailer. They're our largest customer in Uruguay, they're our largest seed grower, and the opportunity that we had to form a true partnership with them and take 50% ownership in that company was just too good to pass by. What that does is it configures our Uruguayan operation, as close as we could probably get it to what we have here in New Zealand. The focus of our South American business in the near term is to deliver on the business promise of those investments. And there's a lot of focus going into now making sure that we deliver on what we have invested and acquired in recent years. AgriTrade's an exciting initiative for us. It's our wholesaling business. Where we buy product from a variety of places and we wholesale that product into the wider rural merchant channel. We sell to farmlands, we sell to RD1, we sell to vets, and AgriTrade sells into our own PGW retail operation. And we were appointed last year as the exclusive New Zealand distributor of Roundup, and that's one great example of how our logistics footprint and the people that we've got out there is attractive to global agri-businesses like Monsanto and Sinochem, who are the two major players in behind Roundup. So if I move now to the third part of our strategy, which is game changers, and if we look out 5 years, 10 years, it's an absolute certainty that some of our current business activities will be transacted and managed very differently than they are today. And our challenge is to ensure that we have got the foresight and the capability to introduce what we call game changers in a way that's complementary to our business and at a time when our customers are ready for them. And that's a really important point, because in any business you can be too early with something new for the market. And so for us, it's not about suddenly going away from everything that we have done in the past to something new, but progressively transitioning with our clients and ahead of our competitors. So to be successful in the game changer space, first thing we have to have is an internal culture that recognises that there are opportunities outside what we do today, and has the kind of the energy and the curiosity to explore them. Now, we need to build partnerships with other people who've got skills or technologies that we may need in a way that will deepen our customer relationships and our understanding of our customers' issues and opportunities and desires. And that's the whole ethos behind the game changer strategy. We see a couple of areas that we think will be really prominent here in the next 2, 3, 5 years, and one of those is precision agriculture. The use of technology to help farmers to run their businesses, applying water, applying chemical, monitoring, measuring inputs and outputs, and understanding the farm system a whole lot better. And the second is technology, online, the technology that we all carry around now that our kids seem to live on. There is no question that this type of tool will be much more common in the way our customers run their farms in the future, and we're trying to catch up, trying to get ahead, and trying to change some of the ways that we do business to become a little more modern, a little more technology savvy, but recognising that we've got a number of customers still that want to do business the traditional way, and we can't move away from that. There's a lot more detail about our strategy in the annual report, and I just would encourage you to look at the summary on page 22 and 23 to get a little more insight there. So let's go back now to the current year. The first quarter of our financial year is always a relatively low contributor from an EBITDA point of view. We sell about 20%, perhaps just a little bit less, of our total revenue in the first quarter, but the profits in the business are made in quarters 2, 3, and 4. So it's always a bit challenging at the end of the first quarter to have a very clear view on how the year is likely to pan out. Typically we would break even at an EBITDA level at the end of the first quarter, and that's what we've done this year. If I compare the first quarter of this year versus the first quarter of last year, which remember was an exceptionally good trading period, we're about 2.5 million behind at an EBITDA level where we were last year, but we're ahead of where we expected to be when we did our budgets for this year. So, that's a good result, and I'm really pleased with that in the context of the way that the markets in which we operate have performed. The areas, there's sort of three areas where we were back on last year, just very briefly: export livestock. We made a shipment to China this time or in quarter one last year that generated us about $800,000 of EBITDA, and we were not able to secure any shipments in the first quarter of this year. Our water and our retail businesses are both back a little on last year, and that by and large reflects the reduction in spending from the dairy sector. And in South America, we are slightly behind last year, and that's a function of the recovery in South America from the drought conditions that occurred in the second half of last year. Generally speaking, other businesses are tracking at or ahead of where they were at the same time last year. And it's particularly pleasing to see that our New Zealand seed business has had a strong first quarter and is tracking ahead of last year's sales and earnings. So if I go to the outlook now and try it, I'd just like to share a little bit about what we are seeing. And it's always challenging to have a very clear crystal ball in agriculture. As you know, agriculture is cyclical and it's volatile, and it has been for as long as I've been a farmer, and I'm sure it will be for as far forward as I can see into the future. It's hard to pick with real certainty what will happen in the next 9 months. But we've just gone through a reforecasting exercise, and we believe that at this point in the year, we're on track to deliver operating EBITDA, including earnings of associates this year, in the range of 61 to 67 million. And at this point, I would say that our forecasts are at the upper end of that range. But the range is wide to reflect the amount of time we've got to go in the year, and the potential for volatility. And if we achieve that result, or when we achieve that result, it'll be the second best year in our recent history. There are two main external drivers of uncertainty that remain, and they're commodity prices and weather, and those are the two drivers of agriculture at any point in time. Commodity prices, if I just look at those, we have seen a bounce back in dairy pricing. Fonterra and other dairy companies are now forecasting that this year's price will be between, say, 4.50 and 5. And in fact, some commentators are picking it a little bit higher. But at the time that dairy farmers set their budgets and set their systems for this year, they were thinking about being paid less than $4. So they're very cautious and conservative. And we don't see that spending pattern will change significantly over this year. And so the recent increases are great for the sector. They will be positive for our business. But we just think that those uplifts will be not felt so much this year, but probably felt more into next year. Commodity prices in other sectors remain generally positive. We've seen beef prices come off a little in the last week or so, but they still are fundamentally strong. Prices for horticulture, pretty good still. Lamb, not too bad. In general terms, the commodity price outlook is becoming clearer and probably more positive than our view would have been 3 to 6 months ago. But whilst that's becoming clearer, the outlook for the weather is becoming less clear. And there are a lot of commentators at the moment predicting very dry summer conditions, El Nino, and we're seeing that it is very dry in a number of places already, a number of them are right here. And so, there's caution out there as a consequence of weather. Now, we always get some regions in New Zealand that are dry, so there's nothing unusual about that. And what happens when one region or two regions are dry is that, cattle gets traded between them and feed gets traded, and the country can generally compensate for that. The risk is that we go into another widespread drought as we did in 2013. And we're not predicting that. We're not building forecasts specifically for that. But there is a risk there, and the potential for that risk you know, makes us a little cautious in our guidance and have a wider range. But again, as I said at the start, you know, the external drivers are only part of the story for us. You know, the key thing is we control our own destiny as a business. We've made a lot of gains. There are a number of further gains that we can make. We believe that the business is well run, and we believe that we are as well placed as we could possibly be to trade through any challenges that may arise, and more excitingly, take advantage of any opportunities that may present themselves, and that's what we are looking to do. You know, we've got engaged teams of people throughout our company, 2,000 people, and you know, they're constantly looking for ways that we can improve our business and deepen our understanding and our relationships with our customers, which is the key. So that's the outlook, and as always, we will keep the market informed as the season develops. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for sticking with me as I went through that overview. I'd now take questions and discussion on the annual report or on any matters that I've covered or the chairman has covered. We've got two microphones available today, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. Someone will bring you a microphone. And when you have the microphone, can I just ask that you state your name, ask your question, and then I'll handle the question or I'll pass it to one of our directors or staff who are sitting out there if the questions are too challenging for me.
Hello, I'm Heiko Müller-Kayer, a private investor. And actually, I've got a lot of questions, but maybe we do one after the other. If we look at PGW's business, then you have got typically huge revenue and quite small profits, so very slim margins. Mm-hmm. And I guess you mentioned as well that, there are other companies around, RD1 and whatever, selling the same stuff. And so I guess, if you want to make a little bit more money, then you probably would need some unique sales proposition. Have you thought about that? What would that be?
Yeah, look, your point's right. We operate in mature markets. There is a lot of competition, and in many cases we are an intermediary, and by the nature of that, your margin opportunity is smaller. The key ways that we differentiate ourselves are through the expertise of our people, the breadth of our product range, our expertise in technical categories around seed, agronomy, ag chem, areas where there is a little more margin and where the consequence of, poor technical advice, poor product choice or poor service on farm is high for the farmer. And so, we try to stay away from the really low margin commodity areas, and we try to focus our expertise on those technical categories. In our seed business, we are the largest southern hemisphere producer of temperate seeds. So we have an enormous technical capability. We have very, very strong research programs, very, very strong product development programs, and that reflects through in very high market shares. So, In this business, though, people and relationships with customers is the number one differentiator. The technical expertise they have is the key thing that they need to bring each day, and then we back our wide product range and good service, and then we try to keep our costs under control so we can make a fair margin at the end.
So I guess this as good as it can get, the margins.
We're always looking to improve, margins where we can. We're always looking to control costs. We're always looking to innovate and bring new products in. We increased our margins last year. We will always continue to do that, but the competitive landscape means that you are sometimes capped. So I think we try to look at the bottom line, and the bottom line has been increasing, and so that's what we try to focus on. And yes, we think there are a lot more opportunities for us across all of our businesses, as I mentioned earlier.
Okay, so I guess if I may, I get rid of a second question and then leave it to the floor. I guess you mentioned on the opportunities South America.
Yes.
I guess, I remember 10, 15 years ago, so this went pear-shaped before. I guess just looking at the composition of your board, at some stage people thought that, maybe China could be a really amazing opportunity. You didn't really talk about China. How is this going?
I'll make two comments here. The first one I'll comment on South America. PGG Wrightson, when it was involved in what was known as Farm Systems Uruguay, that was not, you couldn't say that was a successful venture. We own no farmland in South America now. We don't pretend to be farmers, and we don't have plans to try and replicate that business model. We focus on the product categories that we have expertise in, and we've built a very strong business there based around Uruguayan nationals. 15 years ago when we started, we sold $2 million worth of product, and now we're up well over $100 million. And that business has been built on locals. So the local expertise is the key there. China, yes, we have a strategy for China, and we have a number of activities underway there. We import product from China that we sell through our agri-trade business unit. We sell wool into China. We've sold export cattle into China. We have a series of trials underway in selected regions of China, looking at proving which of our cultivars can successfully translate into what is a very different geographical region. And when we have proved that they are able to be commercialised successfully, then I'm sure we will grow our business there. But, entering new markets takes time. It took us, we started in South America in 1999, and, now we've got a very successful business. And I have no doubt that over time, the business that we have in China will grow. But I absolutely also believe that the core of our business will remain, here in New Zealand for as far forward as I can see into the future. So, we have a close partnership with Agria, our major shareholder. They're a good shareholder, have been for a number of years, and they are helping us well in some of our market entry thinking and on-the-ground strategies in China.
Thank you for the opportunity to ask a few questions. Max Smith's my name. I'm from the New Zealand Shareholders Association, and I'm an independent shareholder in my own right as well. For once, Mr. Chairman, I actually read your report from front to back, all 67 pages of it or whatever it is, and I spent 2 days doing it, and I found it rather interesting. But a few things came out from Mr. Lai's comments, and I perhaps could ask these. Most of them, I think, will be with the objective of being positive and to just find out a few things that perhaps we as investors would like to know, but one or two are perhaps a wee bit more direct. You note in your report, Mr. Lai, that significant increases in revenue for higher margin activities. Specifically, what activities do you see a higher margin possible?
Do you want me to cover that, Alan? Perhaps I'll take that question, given it's an operational question. So, yes, we increased our average margins last year. And a lot of that was product mix related. In our seed business, we sold, as I mentioned, a higher proportion of proprietary product in Australia. In New Zealand, we had a higher sales mix of our brassicas, legumes, fodder beets, which were at higher margin. We grew our ag chem business, which tends to come at higher margins than we would ever get out of selling palm kernel or fertilizer. So, the margin increase was, point something of a percent across the whole business. But in the technical categories that I referred to before, where we are trying to really, differentiate ourselves, we were able to generate higher margins.
The chairman's report also confirms an increase in inventory in Uruguay to meet early sales demand. Is this decision proving to be the right one? Are the anticipated reasons for increased proving correct and bearing positive results?
Perhaps I'll take that one again, Chairman, seeing it's relatively...
Okay.
Would you like me to rephrase the question? So I've got kind of a good mic here.
Okay.
The question was, Max noted that inventories in Uruguay had increased, and we'd talked about having more inventory to meet early sales, and is that a good move? As our business has grown, seed harvesting is an annual process, but we sell seed through the year. And there is always a risk if you are trying to harvest and sell immediately. If the harvest is delayed, then you can't meet your sales orders. And as our business has grown, we've got to the point where, it makes sense for us to have inventory that we carry over and have on hand before the new season's harvest occurs. And that's why we took a decision to increase our inventory levels. And we're very comfortable with that. We saw growth in the market, as I talked about, and part of that growth was able to be met by our decision to carry slightly higher inventory levels.
Well, that's good. I've always been a firm believer when I was in business of having high stocks. You can only sell it if you've got it.
Yeah. There's a balance, you've got to have the balance right. But we're comfortable with that. We're comfortable with our decision.
Sure,
there
you are. Yeah, sure. You did touch on the matter of the National Animal Identification issue and the investigation by the Commerce Commission. I don't want to go into that in any great detail because I'm well aware of what you said about that. My board is interested to know whether or not your board and senior management were aware of this before the Commerce Commission got involved. Were they knowledgeable about it? Did they have some idea of what was going on? And if they did, what did they do about it?
Yeah, so this the implementation of NAIP was back in 2012. It was an operational project, and that's where it was implemented. There was obviously awareness throughout the business of the impending regulations and the need for us to implement tagging facilities within the yards, and really, Max, that's all I am in a position to say at this stage. But what I will say is, at the point that we reach the end of this, we will talk in some detail about what transpired and why it transpired.
We'll leave the question for you to come back to at some future time, perhaps. Your dairy report and in your annual report was, I found, rather good. It was interesting, and I read it thoroughly, and I was quite impressed by it. The report covers the current situation and the potential impact on PGGW very well, and your comments on the likelihood of supply and demand in the dairy industry to rebalance and return to expected levels is noted. However, what is your understanding of expected levels?
When you say expected levels, what do you mean?
Well, I suppose we're talking about the dollars per kilogram of milk fat and that sort of thing.
I'm not a forecaster of that. I'm a dairy farmer, so I have some dairy farms, so I'm acutely interested in it, and I'd like it to be higher, not lower, personally. But I think, you know, this is a personal view now, I think that the current forecasts from Fonterra around the $5 level for this year are probably reflective of the market. Supply in New Zealand will definitely be down. It appears that demand in China is slowly starting to recover. The currency fall will start to flow through as a benefit once the foreign exchange cover that the dairy companies have got works its way out. So I would personally think that we will see prices, you know, trending up towards $6 again. But, you know, that's a personal view. Or hope.
Yeah, the question was generated from the comment within the chairman's report. It led me to believe that you did have some idea of what you thought it might be. Perhaps I misinterpreted that, but it certainly looked that way when I read it in the report.
No, we have no more insight than anyone else on that.
The report also states that your reluctance to have further investment into Argentina, but you're happy to progress in Paraguay and Brazil. Does this mean you see more secure commercial environment in the previous two states rather than Argentina?
Yeah, we think from an investment point of view, yeah. Uruguay, we think, is the safest or the best environment to invest capital into in South America. You know, Argentina is challenged. We manage our risk there very carefully. It's a good place to grow seed for supply into other areas. We've got a very strong strategic relationship with a very large Argentinian fertiliser co-op, so it's an important part of our overall South American mix. As I say, we've got a business in Brazil, and we're looking to grow that. At this stage, we just have our own people on the ground. We haven't made any acquisitions in Brazil. And Paraguay is at the exploration stage.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. One last question, and that's on your 1PGW program, which appears to be well conceived, from what I could see of it, and steadily achieving its desired results. Your point about the emerging leaders aspect seems to be rather well placed. How can you be sure you are not going to lose potential company leaders to your competitors?
Oh, that's something that we spend a lot of time thinking about and worrying about. And people leave companies because they don't believe in the direction the company is taking. They don't believe in the leader that they've got. Those are the two reasons why people leave, and so our challenge and our focus is to ensure we've got, a great passion, strong belief, and a team of people that understand what we're doing and feel good about it. And then we try to make sure that we've got good managers who understand leadership and provide that. And if we do that, then we will generally hold our people. Our staff turnover in the last 2 to 3 years has actually been very low, and if you look through the ranks of PGW people now, there are there are a number of them who historically wore a Farmland badge or an RD1 badge. So we've had a migration in, not out, over the last couple of years, and we're very conscious that we've got to keep working hard to make sure that we give our people a great environment to work in, and that they they're happy and proud to be there.
Well, thank you for that, because that's exactly the answer I wanted. That's good.
Yes, my name's Bill Payne. I'm a shareholder.
Hello, Bill.
I'm friendly with a lot of people who are in the current financial environment, wanting to get out of bank loans, which keep going down and down and down. And I get in discussions with them, and they say, you've got a lot of shares. Yes, well, tell us about them. So you start and you get into report from PGW and many other companies too, and they emphasize EBITDA. And then you start to explain to them what EBITDA is, and they usually go to sleep. Whatever happened to NPAT? NPAT is directly related to EPS, and then dividends, and then dividend ratios. It's a lot easier to understand and explain. Thank you.
Yeah, very, very good question. We obviously report at an EBITDA level, and then we report at a net profit after tax level. The reason that we focus on EBITDA when we're talking about the operational performance of the company is that, you know, it reflects what we are doing in the business operationally. You know, the difference between EBITDA and net profit after tax can be affected by many different things. You know, last year, for instance, we had a series of transactions that resulted in us having quite a low tax rate. So, you know, as it transpired, we paid a relatively low amount of tax last year compared to a normal year. So, you know, one year that could totally distort the performance of the business at an NPAT level versus the next. You know, within, you know, below operating EBITDA, we also include extraordinaries or one-offs. And so 2 years ago, we sold out of a joint venture that we were in, and that might have generated us $8 or $9 million. Now, it was a one-off. It had nothing to do with the operational performance, and it made the NPAT look a whole lot higher for that year. And so, you know, taking everything into account, we feel that the most consistent and reliable way to understand and measure the operating performance of the business is at a higher level. NPAT absolutely, though, has a bearing on reinvestments and dividends and those things. So it's important, but we try to take the noise out by focusing at the EBITDA level. I hope that made sense. Thank you, Bill. Do we have any other questions?
Yeah, I've got one other question regarding the outlook. Mm. And I guess we talked about the milk payout. We didn't really talk about the weather. Now, I understand Sneva is predicting a really, really dry summer. What would this mean for PGW, and how are you prepared to seize the opportunities?
Weather's really complex in our business, and I talked when I was going through the outlook, I talked a little bit about the fact that every year in New Zealand there are some areas that are dry, some areas that have drought, and when there are one or two or three areas we see product move, we see cattle being traded out of dry areas into areas that that have feed, we see feed being traded from one area to the other, and so a drought in a few areas is business as usual for us. The challenge becomes when you get a drought that goes everywhere in the country, because it's then very hard to trade feed or trade cattle, and farmers become quite cautious. The key, we will react to that if it happens. We'll take whatever business is on hand, and we'll do whatever we can do to support our customers who are under pressure, and we spend a lot of time doing that. The thing about a drought for parts of our business, particularly our seed business and some of our chemical parts, is it's actually when the drought breaks, because droughts do break, and a very dry summer that breaks relatively early into autumn is actually quite positive for PGW, because pastures that have been damaged by the drought, farmers see that autumn is coming and it's looking okay. They will then go and generally replant, and so that can be a positive for us. It's hard to predict.
Thanks.
Thank you. I should have asked this question before and didn't. If any, what are the implications following the termination of your Silver Fern farm supply contract?
So we entered the Silver Fern farm procurement agreement 5 years ago, and it was part of the settlement that was reached between PGW and Silver Fern when we were not able to complete the purchase of 50% of Silver Fern farms. And so part of the overall settlement was a 10-year agreement that we had to supply a certain minimum number of cattle every single year for the next 10 years. And if we were not able to supply that certain minimum quantity, then we had very, 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 expensive penalties. And for the first 2 years of that five-year supply agreement, we missed targets, and shareholders will remember that we ended up, we had quite significant penalties. We've always had a good, close relationship with Silver Fern Farms at a management level, and over the last 12 months, we talked to them about where their business was evolving, where ours was evolving, and we just agreed that, the partnership between us and Silver Fern Farm for Procurement, it would go on. It had matured and it was operating well, and we didn't need to have this overarching procurement agreement that was really inflexible, had a whole lot of pecuniary penalties for us in the event that we were not able to perform for any reason. And we negotiated an early termination of it, and that was reported. From my perspective, that was a great outcome. It enables us to continue to work closely with Silver Fern Farm, but it also enables us to go and build relationships with other processors that in some cases we weren't able to build because we were seen to be very linked in with Silver Fern Farms. So it's business as usual. It's a great outcome, and our relationship with Silver Fern Farm is as good as it's ever been. And the stock will flow to, where it needs to flow, and we will facilitate that. If that's Silver Fern Farm, great. If it's Alliance, that's fine. Do we have any other questions? There will be an opportunity at the very end of the meeting for general questions. So, look, on that note, again, I would just like to, I'd like to thank our staff for the contribution that they made last year. It was a great year for us, and it would not have happened if we didn't have the 2,300, or however many people we've got, changes every day. But, we got a lot of people, they're great people, and they do great work, and I just want to acknowledge them and also thank customers. If we have customers in the audience today, thank you for your support and your patronage over and above, your shareholding. So on that note, I'm going to pass now to our Deputy Chairman, Trevor Burt, who will chair the balance of the meeting. So, Trevor, thank you.
The balance of the meeting and the best part of the meeting. Thanks, Mark. Good afternoon. My name's Trevor Burt. I'm Deputy Chair, and I've got the pleasure of taking us through the remaining agenda items that are on the slide in front of you, those being the election of directors and then to authorise the directors to fix the remuneration of the auditors. So the formal business comprises those four resolutions. They're outlined in your notice of meeting and they're on the slide. And similar to recent years, we've again offered shareholders the option of casting their votes on the meeting business by post or online. And this option provides shareholders with more flexibility and convenience where they can't attend this meeting in person or by proxy, but still want to vote on the meeting business. And given that the votes can be cast by shareholders not attending the meeting, it makes sense that all resolutions will be determined by way of a poll. And after the business of the meeting, those in attendance that have not yet cast their votes, they'll have the opportunity to do so. And you'll see the boxes at the back and the Computershare representatives there. So the proposed resolutions will now be considered by the meeting, with all four resolutions to be determined by a poll, and that'll be undertaken by our share registrar at the back, Computershare, and our company auditor, KPMG. Alex Skinner is here to act as scrutineer if required. And the resolutions and accompanying explanatory notes are set out in the notice of meeting. So the first three resolutions relate to the election of directors, and you've got biographical notes for each director set out in the notice of meeting, and those details are also going to be summarised in the slides that you'll see. First one is Ronald Sear. Ronald joined the board in December 2012. Ronald's Singaporean. He's got a background in banking and funds management, and his funds management career spanned 26 years with the AIG group of companies in Singapore. He served as chairman of AIG Global Investment Corporation, Singapore Limited, until 2005, and he's currently serving as an independent director of a number of listed Singaporean companies, including Yanlord Land Group Limited, where he's the chairman of the Audit Committee, Global Investments Limited, where he's the chairman of the Remuneration Committee, M&C Riet Management Limited and M&C Business Trust Management Limited, where Ronald is the chairman of the Risk Management Committee, and finally Telechoice International Limited. Ronald holds a Bachelor of Science, Social Science degree with honours in economics from the University of Singapore, and Ronald is an independent director. And I'd like to give Ronald the chance to say a few words in relation and support of his nomination for election. As before, Ronald, if you want to come up.
Hi, good afternoon. You know, I arrived 2 days ago, glorious morning, blue skies, and the first thing that I did was to take a photograph, and I sent it back home to friends and relatives to make them a little bit more envious, because for the last 2.5-3 months now, Singapore has been covered by a huge cloud of pollution and haze coming across from Indonesia. I think the haze level and the pollution has reached what we'll call hazardous. Actually, you get sick. And there's been a lot of increase in the number of visits to clinics and hospitals. Anyways, so much about the weather. Trevor, thank you for the introduction. It's always giving me a great pleasure to visit this lovely country. And it's good to see very nice, great pointed questions coming from shareholders. I think the board collectively has an accountability, and it's always good to see shareholders asking questions. It gives me a chance to see how the management respond, so that we could kick some butts later on if we are not giving the right answers. I think for the last 3 years serving on the board here, it's given me a chance to really have a good close-up understanding of the hard-nosed business discipline and the technology and the technological sophistication that's coming out of the New Zealand agricultural industry. It is quite amazing. Personally, I do have two takeaways. One, the Asian Pacific region as a whole and many other parts of the world has a lot to learn from New Zealand, from the agricultural sophistication that's coming out of this country. I think they have a lot to learn. Number two, I'm very proud to be associated with PGW. You have a long and proud heritage. And PGW has technology, expertise, experience, and skill sets which can make this company much, much bigger than what it is today. This morning when I woke up, I heard an announcement on the TV. Microsoft has just announced the first quarter results. $20 billion US in one quarter. And a net profit of about $4.5 billion. Technically, we're looking at a company that can be almost 100 billion turnover a year, which is almost half of New Zealand's GDP forecast by World Bank of 211 billion for this year. So it's a huge world out there. And I'm, of course, Microsoft and PGW are in totally different business, but I think the point I'm trying to make here is that Microsoft is what it is today, also because of its culture of excellence and its high level of technology, both of which exist in PGW today. Under the able leadership of Mark, I think PGW exhibits a high level of efficiency and technological sophistication, dedication, and passion. Collectively, that adds up to a lot. So I think looking ahead, I would certainly like to see this company progressing into be a much bigger business than what it is today. I hope to, going forward, to stay on this board, provide guidance to the management here and oversight, and collectively grow the company to what it is, to be much bigger than what it is today. That's about all the remarks I would like to make today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronald. I'm sure you all enjoyed being compared to Microsoft. Are there any questions for Ronald? And as we did before, a microphone can be brought. If you do have a question, this is your opportunity, and I'll offer it after each of the bios of the three directors. Any probing, searching questions for Ronald? Looks like you got away quite easily, Ronald. Okay. We'll move to item three, which is the reappointment of Ken Sing Yu. Let me go through the biographical details of Ken Sing. He also joined PGW the board in December 2012. Ken Sing is head of corporate and legal affairs for Agria Corporation, and he's held that role since December 2008. He's got extensive experience in advising multinational corporations and sovereign entities on direct investments in the People's Republic of China, as well as offshore mergers and acquisition of foreign assets by entities of the People's Republic of China. Ken Sing previously practiced as a partner at Singaporean law firm Shuklin & Bock LLP, focused on East Asia, where he led a corporate finance team in Allen and Overy Shuklin and Bock JLV, an international law joint venture partnership with London-based Allen and Overy LLP. That wasn't easy. Ken Sing sits as an independent and non-executive director of several public listed corporations. Ken Sing holds a Bachelor of Laws with honours degree from Monash University in Australia, and he's a barrister and solicitor of the Supreme Court of Victoria, Australia, advocate and solicitor, Supreme Court of Singapore, and solicitor of England and Wales. In addition to his extensive legal knowledge, Ken Sing is also a qualified economist, having completed his degree majoring in economics and accounting, BEC, at Monash University in Australia. Ken Sing is an associated person of Agria Singapore PTE Limited, our cornerstone shareholder. I'll now give Ken Sing the opportunity to say a few words in relation to his nomination.
Thank you, Trevor. Today is a very good day to meet the shareholders. You brought the rain to the farmers, and from the cultural experience, being a Chinese, rain symbolizes wealth and auspicious signs. So I think we can look forward to better days to come. I've been a director of PGW since 2012 as a non-executive, non-independent director. Agria, together with our partner Natahu, have invested, since 2009 to this company, and more so in 2011. Over those period of time, we have invested actually quite a bit of money. It's over 200 million. Someone asked me this morning, am I happy with our investment in PGW? I would say I'm happy. Am I happy enough? I can tell you that I'm not happy enough. I think PGW, like what my colleague Ronald said, has all the attribute, and heritage of having a potential to become a greater company. And today I'd like to acknowledge the leadership of our chairman, Alan Lai, deputy chairman, Trevor Bird, and also the leadership of Mark and his management team. I think we have more work to do. I've been, very proud to serve you, not only Agria, because the common interest as a shareholder is the same. We're looking, to deliver, return to shareholders. And I believe there's more work, that we as a board need to do for you as the shareholders. And I look forward to, continuing serving you. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken Singh. Again, any questions regarding Ken Singh's background, bio, interests, anything? Okay. If not, I'll move to item four, which is the final one of our appointment resolutions. And you'll note that the notice of meeting records that W.K. Sang was appointed to the board by the directors since last year's annual meeting. And as such, and in accordance with NZX listing rules, W.K. today retires and offers himself for re-election. W.K. previously served on the board of PGW from November 2011 to December 2012. W.K. is a former partner of the Hong Kong and China firm of PwC, and for over 30 years has given his professional experience in auditing listed and unlisted companies and providing support for IPOs and acquisition transactions. WH is an independent director of Agria Corporation, and he's the chair of its audit committee and the chair of its compensation committee and a member of its nomination committee. Currently, WK is also an independent non-executive director of a number of companies listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, including China Animation Characters Company Limited, China Merchant China Direct Investments Limited, Pan Asialum Holdings Company Limited, Sichuan Pharmaceutical Holdings Company Group Limited, and TK Group Holdings Limited. He's a fellow member of the Hong Kong Institute of Certified Public Accountants and a member of the Chinese Institute of Certified Public Accountants and a fellow member of the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants in the UK. WK is an associated person of Agria Singapore PTE Limited, which is our cornerstone shareholder. So, WK, I'll now give you the opportunity to say a few words in support of your nomination.
Thank you, Trevor. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very pleased to have this chance to speak in front of you. In fact, I have looked forward to this moment at the beginning of this meeting. First, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for your continued support to the company. Your presence at this meeting is a good evidence of this support. Second, I want to express my appreciation for the excellent working relationship with the staff of the company, the management team, and my fellow directors. I would like to thank you for Trevor to introduce my biography. One thing I would like to add, I also have a university degree. I major in accounting and computer science. And then I think I don't need to say anything more about the company's finance performance and strategy. because in fact, I find it's hard to find any room to add any additional significant information in this area, because it has been talked a lot about by Mark and even my two period fellow directors, Ronald and Ken Singh. So I think there's no need to me to explore anymore. I think you have heard enough about that. But I still want to say that PGGW Horizon, sorry about that, is a very good company. It has been performed very well in the last few years compared to the previous years. I would say last year's result is excellent, but bear in mind, this is the result of the hard work of the team, which comprises the staff of the company, the management team, and the board. And I'm very proud for being a member of this team. Well, I'm confident that the company will continue to grow as a whole, despite whatever difficulties it may face in the future. And I'm eager to see opportunities to continue to contribute to its success and prosperity. If I am elected as a director again, I will, to the best of my ability, to serve the company, to work together with the team to serve the best interests of all stakeholders of the company and to create value to the shareholders. So to realize what I want to do, your support to me is very important. So here, I thank you for your support in advance, and also thank you for the board's recommendation for my election. Also, I want to express my best wishes for happiness and good health to you all and your family. Thank you again.
Thanks, WK. And again, if there are any questions for WK, I'm sure he'll be delighted to answer them. Okay. All right. I'll move now to resolution number 4. Which is auditor's remuneration, and I note the automatic reappointment of KPMG as our auditor under section 200 of the Companies Act 1993. And the proposed ordinary resolution is to authorise the board of PGW to set the auditor's remuneration. And as is usual with audit fees, due to the complexity and changing nature of the company's affairs, it's not practical to set the remuneration at the beginning of the year. So accordingly, the board of directors is seeking an authority from the shareholders of the company to set the audit fees at the appropriate time. Okay, thank you. I'll now move each of the 4 motions separately as ordinary resolutions. A poll will be conducted in respect of all 4 resolutions at the conclusion of general business. And for those that have not yet cast postal votes, please complete your ballot paper at the conclusion of general business and hand this into the Computershare desk at the back of the room. The results of the poll will be displayed on the projector screen following the conclusion of the meeting, and then we'll announce on NZX. And finally, I'll move to the last item on our agenda, which is general business. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's now open for any general business. Are there any matters for further discussion or any further questions that anyone has? Max.
Firstly, our intention in the New Zealand Shareholders Association is to vote all our undirected proxies in favour of the 3 directors who are standing up for re-election today. We support them, and we think they're ideal for the purpose and task. One other question, though, that comes up in general business, and that is this. We note that your board and all those in your senior management, with the exception of one, all wear suits and ties. We don't see any of them wearing any skirts. Is there any hope at any stage that you might look for a lady to perhaps be on your board or in your senior management at some stage? We're very much a mixed gender organisation.
Yep.
something we'd like to bring to your attention. But
yeah, I think Max, you point to diversity, and gender is one part of diversity and a really important part. And yes, it's part of our diversity policy. We developed a diversity policy some 18 months ago, and you'll see that policy on our website. We focus on four areas of diversity, gender being one and a very important one, but we also focus on ethnicity, nationality, culture, and most importantly, probably competence and skill mix. So, yeah, very obvious there is no gender diversity on our board. Gender diversity in our management group is low. So, and you'll see the figures that we publish in the annual report on it. So I don't think we get a tick in that box. I think we do get a tick in the other boxes of our diversity approach around ethnicity, culture, and the competency mix that we have in amongst our board. So it does give us something to work on. But, you know, we like to look at diversity in a really broad sense. I think what you as a shareholder want to see is the board having diversity of thought and contribution? Because if we're all thinking the same, it doesn't matter whether we're Chinese, Japanese, male, female, you know, that's not going to do you any good. So having different competency mixes, and I think gender adds one of those, so noted. Thank you. Any others that Mark can answer? Okay. All right, well, look, thank you very much. I want to thank you all for your attendance. It's good to see a good turnout of shareholders coming along and showing an interest in the company. And we'd like you to stay for refreshments, which are at the back of the room. All of our board and management team will be here and happy to answer any questions. So, again, thank you very much.